you know, with the four rows, we've got about 48 seats, and we don't always have like 40 something people, but y'all treat each other like you got COVID or something, and y'all just kind of spread apart and won't sit next to one another. So I asked them to put another row back there, and then we have a bunch of people out, not just ill, but out. So, but they're going to start leaving it for us. Okay, so the last couple weeks we've been talking about covenant, and we're going to do that again today. But first, I'm going to do a little recap, so we, you know, for what we've kind of talked about, and then tell you what part of the covenant we're going to talk about today. So Billy started us off with the salt covenant. I brought my little salt covenant pouch that when I was made a deacon, elder, whatever term they used at old Sherwood Bible Church days, we all, when they did this ordination, it wasn't just me. It was, there were several. It was Miss B and old Kenny McClure and some other people that were involved in this. And it's when Doc kind of changed how they were going to do things at the church. And so I've just always kept this on my, in my library, on my bookshelf and all of that. And, you know, Billy started us off talking about that because the Bible doesn't say much about it. It just says about a few things about salt covenant, talks about salting all of the sacrifices. And I think it's a good principle. I've talked about it, you know, how you see couples use sand, you know, when they pour in the marriage thing and all of that. And I think they should start using the salt covenant, that they both pour in salt, because then it's impossible to separate it. I've known people that have separated that if they put the black and white sand together, they would spend the weeks, months, and years going through there and picking out all of the black or white ones just to make sure that the separation was complete. You know, but if you make it really what the picture is of the salt, that it's impossible. Once you put and mix your salt together, you cannot separate. There's no way of knowing whose is whose. All right, and then we went into the covenants of the Bible. But the reason we're doing this is because we've been talking about this for a little while. We've had a few people ask about it. And that is, what we said was how different we are and how much we appreciate the liberty that Pastor Scott has given us. And Pastor Scott and I have talked several times about how unique what we're doing here. And not just because we have a Shabbat service, a Messianic service, but because we're building a structure within a structure. And so we wanted to get that part organized a little bit and to include things like membership. And we will likely use this salt covenant mentality as we grow and do that. If you want to become a regular member of this congregation and all that that means, and we'll talk more in a few weeks about what all that means, but I just thought it was important to lay down this idea so that we understand that if you're a believer in Messiah, you're in covenant with every other believer in Messiah. We are. And we kind of forget that, and because we have forgotten how important covenant is in God's world. It is everything. He built. Remember the story, and we refer back to this quite a bit in Acts, the other 15, Genesis 15, when Abraham kept asking, "How will I know? How will I know?" And God said, "Go get me some animals. Go get them." Abraham, he didn't. Well, why? He knew that God was going to make a covenant with him, and he knew that God was going to keep his word based on making a covenant with him. And unfortunately, there's too many people and too many in the Messianic community to think that doing that is the opposite of what we should be doing, because they have this mentality that we've moved away from church, therefore we don't need structure, and we don't need elders and deacons and pastors and buildings and bylaws, and we're just going to do things in our house and not really have anybody in charge. The irony. People who need to get back to Torah are doing something that is the complete opposite of Torah. The Torah is completely literated, both Old and New Testaments, with structure and authority and responsibility and do's and don'ts. And somehow I don't understand how that there's so many in the Messianic community that just want to kind of throw that aspect away, that they just want to get together and sit around and talk about Torah. But then when you start talking about, well, what do you guys do? Well, we just study. Okay, well, I guess you guys might just be a perfect congregation and you never have a problem. And everything is great. Everybody's the same. So, cool. I guess that whole part in Timothy, when you start talking about deacons and elders and responsibilities, I guess you guys just ignore that part. They don't really talk about that because they equate that erroneously with church and not realizing what Paul was doing in Timothy and all those other things. So we're trying to get back to build some more of that, and that's, again, why we're talking about covenants. There's also another group within the Messianic community that, because they, I'll just talk about this very shortly. They've become very anti-Paul because in the hyper-law people, they think Paul teaches against Torah, even though Paul went very clearly in Acts 20 and 21 to explain himself to the leaders. And because he's teaching and he makes very clearly who his audience is, that it's the Gentiles, that that's who he's primarily addressing, that we have these people that are hyper-Torah, that they don't want to listen to Paul anymore because he's saying you don't have to do these things. And there's a big group of people out there that are trying to be, make sure, they're trying to do exactly the people who stood up at the beginning of Acts 15 that says we need to command them to be circumcised and keep all the law. And it's funny, I just always want to go, can you guys reread that for me loudly, maybe a dozen, 2,000, a million times? How is it that you think that? And then they just start ripping it. And then you got this other part that they just go, well, Paul's not God. And even he clearly said, I say, not the Lord. And here's what they do. They go, so therefore, we don't have to follow anything that he says because we don't know if he's talking from himself or from the Lord. He says that like twice, I think. And it's a very clear circumstance. And again, that's why you hear people like me and Dr. Berryhill and Dr. Mosley, Dr. Stewart say, you got to study. You got to learn exactly what you're reading. Don't just take a verse out of context and create a whole theology on it. And even if that was true, let's just say that, not that that was true, but let's just say for a second that Paul said on a regular basis, I say, but not the Lord. Guess what? He still has the authority to make the rule. You go, what do you mean? This is part of the authority that we're talking about. It says in the book of Galatians that Paul, after spending some time, it says he went to confer with Peter, James, and John, who were the leaders. And he went to tell them, hey, this is what the Lord has laid upon my heart. This is what he's called me to do. And he starts talking about his calling. And it says that they gave him the right hand of fellowship. So what that means is, at that moment, Paul went to them, and he gave them their blessing. And when, so it's he just gave them a handshake. It's really what it means. They said, you're welcome into the community, and we approve of what you're doing. And then they sent him out to go continue to do what he was doing. Okay, but that wasn't Jesus. Okay, well, Jesus gave those three men that said that the authority to make that decision. One of the things that we've misunderstood when Yeshua made the comment about binding and loosing and all authority on heaven, he gave that to those apostles. And so we have to, if you have friends or if you are one of those that think we don't have to listen to those things that he wrote out, then you need to reread a couple of those things because he was given that authority. So we need to move away from that mentality as well. You know what it is? It's the same thing. It hasn't changed since Genesis 3. Did God say? The enemy has never changed his tactic one time. He just asks it from a different way. Did God say? Because the minute he gets you to not believe and trust the Word of God, then he gets you to believe whatever you want. And now we have what we have. Okay, so we talked about how the covenants build upon one another, how we went through from the Abrahamic, the Edenic, Edenic, and then the Edenic. That one's always difficult to get out. Then the Noadic, then the Abrahamic, and then the Moses, then the Davidic, and then we got the New. And how they all build upon one another, and we need to get away from this idea that they're just completely separate individuals and one replaces its predecessor, and it's just not true. All right, and as I said, if we're in covenant, in the New Covenant, then we are default in covenant with one another. And we need to remember that every time we come across a brother or sister in the Lord, outside of this building, outside of the Messianic community, we are in covenant with them. We are in the New Covenant together, and we need to remember that. There's another aspect of the Messianic community that has got to get itself together, and that is this divisive nature within it, that therefore we have this revelation that God has given us, and therefore we're more gooder. That's proper English. Okay, but the point of covenant, why do we need to talk about covenant? Because the point of covenant is to build a community that worships God together. That's the point of covenant. It's so that every time you see that, it was about a relationship between that individual and God. Or when you see the covenants that were made with one another, it was in relation about worshiping God, even those big ones that weren't mentioned. And so a covenant community is one that fights for one another and is accountable to one another. And we don't like to talk about that aspect of things. But here's where it's done wrong. Before service, Andrew was sharing about a brother that we know that's making some critical errors. And one of the things that we need to remember when we approach people that are doing that, that it's never than it was from the environment in which I grew up around, which was get the sinner out of the camp. We don't want them to infect the community. They're a bunch of lepers. There's a very little aspect of that. There are some people that will come in that are just bold-faced, stone-cold, rebellious, and they will disrupt and shake up everything. And there's an aspect and there's a time where you go, you got to get. Because Paul even said that about a very small group of people to do that. But you got to go to them in love. Go, look, brother, you're walking down a path. God said, don't veer to the left, to the right. Right now, you're off the left. We need to get you back on this path. This is not a good path that you're on. It should always be a love. That's accountability. It's not, ooh, you saw what movie? You're going to hell. Not that kind of stuff. But it's always about accountability to get them back on the path because we love them. We don't want to see them off. Again, not as an authoritarian. That's unfortunately, I remember that was the weirdest thing. I was at a church when I was in Iraq, in Baghdad. The way this one was structured was there was a guy that was sitting up on a, he had a big chair. And he was just sitting up there like the kingmaker. And I just thought it was the weirdest thing. And then he was just pointing and directing the way service and stuff. And I was just like, this is weird. I got to get out of here. There's sometimes that stuff gets to the place where the people lord that control. And that's not what we're talking about in accountability. All right. And we also said that the Hebrew root word for covenant goes back to Genesis 1:1. So the word is brit, but it comes from bra. And not like you're used to saying bra, but that's how it sounds, bra. And that's not like, what up, bra? But it is bra. All right, and it's when God created heaven. It's when he created the heavens and the earth. And the root for covenant, the word brit means to cut something. But the root means to carve out something. And so there's some rabbinic tradition that says things like God carved out the heavens and the earth from within himself. That's why he can feel everything, that's why he's in tune with everything, because he carved it within himself. And that's a fine example. I don't really necessarily believe it that way, but I understand the concept that they're trying to make, is that when we're in covenant, here's the mentality, and this is what it comes down to about being in covenant. God has carved you out, and the word also goes further into mean to form, to fashion, to create. God has carved, formed, fashioned, created you to be something in this life. And if I am covenant with you, then that means I am in covenant to see that happen in your life. That's what it means. And I'm here to help you become the covenant person that God made you to be. And vice versa. We're here to support one another, to build one another, so that we can fulfill whatever it is that God formed, fashioned us to be. That's what it means to be in covenant with one another. Yes, I took it a little bit further in the idea that in a literal aspect of defending one another and all those different things from a natural standpoint, that we should be each other's defenders. But if we're in that level of covenant, here's the part that is difficult. That means that I'm going to help you become whatever it is, and vice versa. We are here to help one another. This is not a, you know, me, you. This is a us, we, people in covenant. And that means we will do whatever it takes for you to become the thing that God has formed you to be, even if that means I have to cut you. And sometimes cut you means coming and saying things that are not comfortable. And so you got to say things that are sometimes not comfortable. And remember, and there's a place in the book of Galatians where Paul says that my little children whom I labor and birth again until Messiah is formed in you. He said this because he was dealing with some people who seemed to be sliding away. But he said, yes, I will yet again, I will wrestle with you to see you become all that God has had for you to be. That's what it means to be in covenant, is that we're not going to cut. We're not going to cut bait. We're not going to run. That there's going to be times in which we're going to have to cut one another. but always out of love, because we want to see that individual become everything that God has called them to be. And then, but it, again, it's not meant to be in the way that might sound. We're going to rub. Iron sharpens iron, all that stuff, all right? Okay. So this week, we're going to talk about another covenant. We're going to talk about the marriage covenant. So my intent this week was to kind of skip through this. And I thought that maybe that we would just kind of run through the marriage covenant and then tie it together with the prophetic stuff that I've been working on, as far as seeing how the marriage ceremony and all of that and all the prophetic aspects of that. Well, when I started doing all the research and I got 7-8 pages into it, I was like, yeah, this ain't going to work. Since he's not here, I can say this. I'm not going to pull a Billy on you. I'm not going to preach for an hour and a half. His son's at an archery competition, which I believe he has an opportunity for. This is like one of those things where he can like be on the Olympic team, kind of the qualifier kind of things. So it's that level. So he's like, yeah, I think I'm going to go support my son in this. Also, he might actually get this for a scholarship too. So yeah, he went to go be with him. So I can poke at him since he's not here today. And you guys can't tell him because that's gossip. All right. But I did have a lot, and so I just felt, and even when I was going through and I was going through the stuff on the marriage covenant stuff, I just felt like I needed to stay here, and then and you'll find out why here in a minute. And then we'll talk about the marriage ceremony, because the marriage ceremony itself was just so much, and I couldn't put them together and then adequately talk about this. Okay, so I couldn't do that whole enough justice. But I got to do the disclaimer. I am not judging your past, your present, or your future. So some of this may sound difficult, but it's not my intent, and we'll just go with that. Okay, but before we talk about marriage, let's talk about dating. It's the precursor in most cases. One of the reasons that Abby is my favorite, she's not here, neither, oh, she is here, she's tucked back there, is the other two that I wanted to hear that. So I can make it, it's a joke. It's a joke. Because Abby said to me one day that she goes, I just think it would be great. It would just be so much easier if you just picked the man I'm supposed to marry. And I was like, right? Because she's finding out boys are a pain. They are. I were. So it happens. But there's actually so much wisdom in that. Unless you watch the Fiddler on the Roof, right? Because here's what a dad's going to do. What a dad's going to do is go, you know, it makes sense that she's married to the butcher because she's never going to go hungry, and he's going to take care of her, and he's going to provide. See, that's how a father thinks, right? We're thinking logically, and that she's going to be provided for. Never mind the fact that you're taking your teenage daughter married to a 40-year-old butcher. Now that's, you know, that's awkward. Okay, but yes, logically some of those things make sense. But anyway, it is one of those things that need to be addressed, right? Because the purpose of you finding a mate in this life is to build the kingdom of God together. And you are in a covenant with that person. We have forgotten that. It's not the missionary date. I think it was when we were in Sukkot, that was the first time I heard that terminology. I was like, missionary date? What does that mean? Meaning, as I go to a foreign country to missionize people for Christ, I'm going to go find me the right person that's not living biblical, and I'm going to go be a missionary to them to try and get them to walk right, because they're going to be my spouse. That's missionary dating. I thought that was the best term I ever heard. You're not supposed to missionary date. You're supposed to find the person that's going to be in covenant with you. And you're not supposed to do it for the burn. And I'll address that in a moment. Paul uses that terminology. You got to watch out for flags. Few people change without an encounter to God. My delightful wife has said to me on numerous occasions, not in a mean-spirited way, she just says, if you had not met God, I assure you we would not still be married today. I don't get it. I've always been a delightful peach. I have no idea what she has. I don't know how she envisions how I was 20, almost 30 years ago. I don't know what she got. But no, she's right. And most people don't change until they have that encounter. Did you say, blessing, Lord? Right, right. I think they got lightning rods on the top of the building, so it should be Kate. So most people don't change. Watch the flags. And by the way, it's not your job to change them. Or if you get married and they still seem to be the same way, guess what? They were that way beforehand. As one of the people that my wife and I were talking to, this was someone that's they're a little bit older than us, and we were saying they were complaining how their husband still wanted to go out and just, you know, get drunk and do drugs and go to rock concerts and all this stuff. And he's like in his late 50s, and she's like, "When's he going to change?" She's like, "Where did you meet him? Getting drunk, doing drugs at a rock concert." So he didn't change, but you did. And so now you're putting upon him that he's still the same way he was when you met him. Yeah, you would think a grown man in his late 50s would eventually go, you know, this is probably not. But that's an extreme version, but a lot of people do that. Well, how come you're not? Why ain't I? Why are you trying to make me into the individual that you want me to be? Instead of realizing that I am who I am, and until God changes me, people don't change. They just don't. It's something that I really had to learn. It doesn't matter. The truth of the matter is, if there's anybody that's in this message that's going to be impacted today, probably less than 10 or 5% of you will change as a result of it, until later the Spirit of God slaps you in the head with it. It's just true. You know, how many times did people hear the Word of God? That John the Baptist was preaching, Jeremiah was prophesying, Isaiah was prophesying, and they went, "Okay, well, we got to go see Baal about this thing over here, so we'll talk at you later." They just ignore it. It just happens. It's just the way it is. All right. Any other reason? Remember Paul said at one point, he said that, "I wish that you wouldn't even get married." And he said, "But if you're going to burn," meaning he was just talking, "if you got to take care of your physical needs, then just do it, for crying out loud." I mean, that's basically what he said. It would be better that you just get married than it would be to just do immoral things. Now, if you get married for that reason, then don't expect love and romance post the marriage, right? If you just can't control yourself, you can't be alone. Now, the other aspect of that is loneliness. I mean, that is a very serious thing. You know, that a lot of people, you know, they kind of diminish that. And there can, I mean, God said very clearly about Adam, it's good that man not be alone. Well, that applies to women too, right? That it's, there's an aspect of that loneliness. And sometimes it's a struggle for people to go through that. But if it's something else, just realize before you move into those things, very few people change. Just remember that very few people change. Okay. We have forgotten that a marriage covenant, if you don't understand what this means, then go get an anatomy book. The marriage covenant was actually supposed to be a blood covenant. That's all I'll say about that. It's meant to be special, sanctified. Who remembers the terminology holy matrimony? It was to be completely other, completely different than all other relationships that you have on this earth. All others are supposed to be completely different. That's what the word holiness means, to be completely other. So you're not supposed to have a relationship like you have with your spouse, like anybody else. It's meant to be different. It's a bond and an intimacy that is unique. You know the word love in Hebrew, you know, we talk about, you know, we have the agape church. And then you have the agape love, the God kind of love, the phileo love, the brotherly kind of love. But in Hebrew, the main word that's primarily used is ahava. And love is supposed to be intense always. It just manifests different. So we should, because how can you love your neighbor if yourself unless the love's the same? But the manifestation is obviously different, right? Because how you love your spouse and how you love God and how you love your neighbor, all of that is supposed to be with great intensity. The word means to breathe and to pant. It's a very intense word. But when Yeshua uses that phrase, or God uses the phrase, and then Yeshua quotes it, to love your neighbor as yourself, that means you're supposed to love them as much as you love yourself, as much as you love your spouse, as much as you love God. But again, how it manifests is different. That's really the best way. That's why I don't really like the terminologies in that, what's used in Greek, because then it changes the meaning of love. And love is the same. It's just meant to be passionate and full of fire, I guess would be the best way to say it. And so we should have that level of love and passion for all of our brothers and sisters and even those outside the camp. Okay. So the reason this is so important that I felt like I needed to talk about some of the marriage stuff is because God uses this terminology over and over and over again to build the community of God. It's what he says of Israel. It's why he said at one point in Jeremiah, where he talked about even divorce in Israel, talked about them playing the harlotry and committing adultery and all this, because it's a marriage. That's why we're going to have the marriage supper of the Lamb. That's why we're going to be dressed in white robes and all of that, that picture that's being painted by the imagery that God uses. So it's very important that we understand how important this is. I think we have forgotten that. The covenant of marriage is the building block of society. It is. Of congregations, of nations. Without it, there's no families. And the way synagogues count people is not by individuals, but by families, because families are that important. Yes, individuals are important as well, but the whole idea is that we are going to do the first commandment, be fruitful and multiply, that we're going to go out and then build a community, and so you got to have that. So this covenant is extremely important, and we have to understand this if we're going to build a community. And it's not even the disagreements within church today that's caused all of the denominations. You know, we hear big numbers like 40,000 been thrown around or whatever. But it's the collapse of this understanding of how important the marriage covenant is the main reason for the collapse of our society. It really is. A lot of people will say, well, look at what the political party X is doing or political party Y is doing. Well, look at this particular group, and everybody loves to point about, you know, their homosexuality, transgenderism, just rampant fornication, just pick whatever. And a lot of people will blame those things on what's going on with society. It's not because of those things. It's because that we have forgotten the seriousness of this covenant and because of all the broken families. And do you know that a lot of those people that are in that environment usually come from that environment? One of the statistics I got when Billy and I went through that class on for the prison, it was something like 78%. It was an extraordinarily high number of the men in those prisons came from fatherless, broken families. That's the number one indicator of where you will be in life. It doesn't matter what color you are. It only matters how strong and important those families are. It really is. It goes into everything from incarceration to how much money you make, how solid you will be, because those important families will then teach children the importance of how important the family is and how important that covenant is. And but I don't want to you also don't want to just blame it all on that, because sometimes when people fall, it's just because they don't want to do it because God said to. Right? So if people are, you know, being trans or being gay or being, you know, rampant drug use or whatever you want to call it, whatever sin you want to put with it, it's just because, well, God said to do it, well, I'm not doing it. It's just that way. I mean, I used to be somewhat wired that way, right? Just go do that. No. It's actually an aspect that I still wrestle with. Because she'll say, hey, even I am like the guy in the parable that Yeshua said to the two. He said, hey, go do this. And the one says yes, but then he doesn't do it. And the other one says no, and he goes and does it anyway. I always say no. Always. Always. Because it's one of those things that but I always do it. It doesn't matter. It's like this, I just have this reflex. Hey, would you? No. Hey, you, no. You know, it's just, and you know, it's just the way some people are. Now, obviously I don't do that in everything, otherwise I wouldn't be serving God today, but it's just, it comes back to really my sarcasm. Please help me, God. One of the things that Dr. Brown has said on regularly on his podcast is he said, more than any other sin, political mess that you want to put, he said, no-fault divorce in the church has done more damage to our culture than anything else. Because if we are willing to cut from the most sacred of covenants If it becomes so easy to cut, then that means all of our communities and all our other relationships aren't as much. And we're going to talk about justifications and all that stuff here in a minute. But it's true, because I want you to think about, if you think about what the Word and talking about love and compassion and relationship and passion within a relationship, and you talk about how that's supposed to be manifested difference between you and your spouse, and you have the level of intimacy and relation that you have with no one else on this planet, and in God's designed world, it was never supposed to be anybody else. You know, that's actually part of the reason that deals with and why we shouldn't judge whether you talk about someone who's, you know, just a fornicator or homosexual or whatever, is because sometimes their first encounter, because the first encounter is supposed to be, it is supposed to be, by design, to be intense and intimate with that person that you're supposed to be with for the rest of your life. And when you find out those, you know, as people would say, use a old school word, floozy or whatever terminology you want to use, promiscuous, it's because their first experience was a bad experience, but it was still an intense experience. And they're trying to fill something that was robbed from them. In the overwhelming majority, it's another high number, like in the 70% of people that are in those other lifestyles come from abuse, because that first intense emotional experience was supposed to be between them, their mate, and God. And it ended up being through an evil and demonic thing. And so a lot of times they're searching for that experience that was lost. And that's why you should never have this looking down upon, this holier than thou, because I say to people, you have no idea how you would have turned out if those things would have been done to you. We just don't. And you have to thank God that you weren't those things that happened. And it's because, again, you're not trying to justify, but it's a statistical fact that people have to wrestle with these things, because that is supposed to be a very initial and one time and very intimate and strong thing between you and your mate. And because we've lost that power of that concept, and because we've lost the idea that it was to be a blood covenant, we've lost the idea that it's meant to be for life. And if we lose that, and if we're willing to cut from that one, then we'll cut from everybody else who's just somebody we attend church with. Blood thicker than water? We've heard that, but most everybody thinks that means that if I am of the same blood of you, that it is stronger than someone that's not. And it's actually the opposite. A blood covenant, someone that you're in blood covenant with, is stronger than someone you break the water of the womb with. That's why your relationships, and many times in here, your church families that are really strong are oftentimes much stronger than your family relationships whom you share blood with. But it's the opposite. Who you're in blood covenant with him. And this is why Yeshua said it this way. That's why he made these very strong statements. If you don't love me more than you love your own wife, more than you love your own father, mother, children, everybody, then you're not worthy of me. It's that relationship is the one that is the most important. And of course, I'm not trying to make it sound like I'm trying to diminish, right, our family relationships. We would all ideally love that we all grew up in a house where mom and dad and grandma and grandpa and everybody took us to church, and we're all not only in water relationship, but we're in blood covenant relationship as well. So that's ideal. And there's a verse in the book of 1 John 4:20 where it says, if you don't love your brother who you can see, then how can you love God who you can't see? And if we can say that we can't love, that we can leave the love of that one, of that very strong covenantal relationship, then how can we say that we love this other person that we don't have that super strong bond with? And I will tell you that my Casey's and I's is very different, because I got saved 3 years after we got married. And ideally, you would want people that, you know, raised in that perfect environment and understanding what it means in the covenant they're walking into. And you know, ours is just purely a thing of the grace of God. But also, I don't like to say that, because sometimes that cheapens that statement, I think, is used too much. Because we also by saying that, then it diminishes the responsibility of change. Because it's like, you know, if someone was to say, well, I was just blessed with a wonderful wife. And if you don't have one, I guess God doesn't like you. You know what I mean? That's why you can't really say that I was just blessed with a wonderful spouse. Because if you have one that's difficult to deal with, God doesn't like you, apparently. Or maybe we made choices and we have all not changed. Because there is an aspect of that, and it's just, you know, that on a personal level, it was because my change was so radical. It really did. I mean, I don't diminish what she said at all. We wouldn't have made it. But then over time, that relationship strengthened and become a much greater bond. And then, you know what? That's natural too. And it's just like, but you know why? Because we stuck it out. Because we went through the fights, which we only had one, I think. That's it. But there, you know, some. But you still go through growth together is the best way to say it. And some of the, you know, some of the best friends that, in the world are people that got into fist fights. It's a dude thing, not a hair pulling woman thing, but it's a dude thing, right? That guys that ended up fighting end up becoming very good friends. Because once you get rid of the issue and you actually find out and start talking to that individual, and that's what it talks about within the relationship. Because once you struggle through those things and realize, well, what are we doing here in this marriage? We're cutting each other because we're trying to see the other person become the thing that God created him to be. Not to cut them down, but to cut them, to build them, to form, to fashion, to do all of those things. So that's why I felt like I needed to talk about this, because it's very important. Because if we understand the importance of this relationship and realize that when we take this bond, as that scripture says about if you can't love God, who you can see, then if you can't love the one you're in the most intimate relationship with, then how could you ever be in covenant with people that don't have that? And so that's the point of this. This is not so much about a ripping on marriage or people that have gone through divorces or whatever the case is, or if you go through one in the future, because we're going to talk about that here again in a minute. But it's the idea that we need to remember how important and how strong that is, okay? All right, next. And why? I have a theory. Now, I couldn't give you a statistical number with it, but nearly, and I have to say nearly, but it should be 100%, of all believers, males, and all believing females should be able to marry one another. Should be able to marry one another. You're going to have to explain that, preacher. Meaning, if we treat one another how the Bible says we're supposed to treat one another, then you will grow close with virtually anybody that shows you love and respect and kindness and takes care and, as the Bible says, to prefer one another. But the reason I say nearly, because you may have a thing against bald guys or guys with beards or short guys or whatever. There may be certain things that you just can't overcome. I mean, it's a fact. It's true. But you will find that people, and I bet if you just took a bunch of blind people and you just had, they were being treated with kindness and respect and going out of your way, that's the biggest thing that has made our relationship the strongest, is we go out of our way to make sure the other one's happy. Sounds cheesy, but it's true. And you know what? We don't say things that are going to tick off the other one. You turn the other cheek. Well, that hill's not worth dying on. There are some people that love to fight over every single nook and cranny and just go, why? It's just not worth it. And then what you're going to find out is a week, an hour, 10 days later, you're going to be like, why was I so mad? I was so stupid. And it's a good thing you didn't say nothing. It's a good thing you turned the other cheek, because it's just not worth it. And people just fight over the dumbest things. It's just crazy. But again, I really believe it, that if you just took, if every single Christian was single, you know, if every person that was a Christian in the world was single, then really there should just be no reason that people could not, because I'm going to show you loveness and kindness and gentleness and respect, and I'm going to care for you. And you know what? You can take the most beautiful woman or most handsome man in the world. If they're a putz, they are not fun to be around. You don't want to marry them. But you could take someone that's less than attractive, but is the most beautiful and kind person. And you're going to be attracted to them simply because of the kindness of their heart and the gentleness of their soul, because they're treating you how the Bible says to treat one another. You know, a lot of people, how many people have heard the book of Ephesians, chapter 5, where it says that that God is going to provide himself a church without spot or wrinkle? And a lot of people quote that in being an end times prophecy, and how the church will be perfect. Some say sinless. Some say with the fullness and restoration of all the gifts and all that kind of stuff. But a perfect church, again, whatever that would look like. And I always say, you mean the church that where Paul withstood Peter to his face? The church where Paul separated from Barnabas? You mean that one? I think Paul was the problem. But no, it's not what it means. If you go read it in context, it's talking about husband and wife relations. You know the one verse that most men like to pull out of there? Obey your husband. I always go, what about the part about loving your wife? What about that part? So this is the weirdest thing, that so men are so stupid. If you loved your wife, she would respect and obey you. And if you were looking at it from the idea of obey as in a puppy or a servant, then you've really misunderstood what it means. And unfortunately, that's what all the knuckleheads thought years ago, that it was pushed that way. But the whole point of that thing about spot and wrinkle is he's laying out the whole thing about how family relations are supposed to look. And what that means without spot or wrinkle means a church that has a bunch of great strong marriages, that's what that means. That's what that means. It's not an end times prophecy that the church is going to be perfect in the end. Okay, divorce. Matthew 19. Jesus is asked the question, when is it okay? He's asked the question, and it's from verses 3 through 10 of 19. He says, can you divorce for just any reason? I don't think we should look at this question here as the end-all be-all for relations ending, because he only gives one answer. I personally believe that he's answering the common question of the day between the two biggest schools, which was Hillel and Shammai. I think that was the main thing, because the reason they asked the question that way is because they were asking it from the Hillel perspective, which was he believed you could divorce your wife for anything, even if she made a bad meal. I mean, anybody that would teach that, I would never listen to another word to have to say. You know what I mean? It's just like, what level of discernment do you have? You are an idiot. You think you would ruin the relationship that God established just because she made a bad meal? Huh? They give a list. It's more than just a bad meal. If she displeases him for anything. But then Shammai says it was only for sexual immorality. And so it seems as though Yeshua is just giving the answer here, that it's only for that reason. But we know that's why I say we shouldn't look at that as the end-all be-all, because a friend of mine, friend of ours, Dr. Wheeler, is a pastor of a church up in Pocahontas, and he was trying to take care of a woman and her children because her pastor would not help her. Her husband was beating her. And when she went to their pastor, he asked, is he committing adultery on you? And she said, no, then you have to stay with him. And I was just like, the level and lack of discernment is, I was like, leave that church, leave it immediately. And by the way, I'm going to give that preacher an opportunity to turn the other cheek, because that is a complete moron. Because you don't understand the context of that. So I think that's why we shouldn't use this statement when Yeshua was asked that in Matthew 19. And we're not going to get into all of those things, but there are cases for that. And that's why I always say that those things are between you and God, how all those things are handled. Because here's what's going to happen. God is going to ask both people on Judgment Day, did you love her? Did you love him? Did you follow my word? Did you respect her and respect him? Did you treat them as I would treat them? Everybody's going to have to answer for those. So we can... again, it's not to get into that. But I also say it this way. There's times to be allowed. But you remember Yeshua said, and this is why I said it that way, Yeshua said the only reason he gave that, the only reason Moses gave the out was because of the hardness of our hearts. Because if I do something that makes my wife not happy, this is a word of wisdom and revelation for somebody. Don't do that. If I do something that makes her happy, do that. This is not hard. It's not rocket science. And usually it's because, as Yeshua said, the hardness of our hearts. There was something that one person in that relationship was being selfish about. And here's the interesting statistic. 100% of all separations would say it was the other one. Because most of the time we're not honest with ourselves. And we're not honest when a counselor is talking, because it's very difficult to work through how people see those things. And that's, I don't want to give an out, but at the same time, we don't want to discount backstories in people's lives. And sometimes it's difficult for people to look through those hurt lens, those abuse lens, those past relationship lenses, and those other things. And sometimes it's just not able to be seen. And only recently have I been willing to accept that because of a disagreement I had with somebody. That sometimes people just can't see. And I just tell people, I hope you're not the one. Because maybe it's because whenever I feel like I've done something out of line, I get corrected pretty quick by the Spirit of God. And so on the rare occasion that I do anything to aggravate her, usually I don't make it more than about a half a day where I'm just going, I'm sorry, I was an idiot. You know, I won't do that again. I apologize. You know, because you got to, I don't understand those. That's just me personally having to wrestle through when I watch those separations. And are we honestly evaluating ourselves within those covenantal relationships? And are we doing the things by loving one another, respecting one another, cherishing one another, going out of our way to make sure that one another is loved and respected and feels all those things. So it's important. And we need to remember this, because there's just a craziness and a chaos in our world. And as we continue to move forward in what we're building here, we have to understand how important this covenant is in God's sight. And as you, whether you're a single person, whether you're a married person, recently married person, whatever the case is, you have to understand how important this is in God's sight, and that you wrestle and fight and struggle through whatever differences that you have to be that picture and that example that God intended the marriage covenant to be. And then, you know what? Sometimes it's going to be difficult. And you know what? That's okay, because sometimes our friendships are difficult. Sometimes we rub each other the wrong way. But if we're in covenant, guess what? We're not leaving. We're going to work this out. We're going to fight this out. And that's when people asked me, you know, when I was trying to work out this other issue, why do you keep doing this? Because I will fight for unity and restoration with every last breath that I have, because I believe in the words in this book. And that means with our relationships, within our community, and all of that. Okay? I'm going to play this video another time. We're not going to do it today. It's just not, it wouldn't work. I'll close with this. If we're going to build a strong Messianic community, then we must understand what it means to be in covenant. We must understand that God is a covenantal God, that He could have justly walked away from Israel because they went and worshiped other gods. But He didn't. So much so that He made it impossible. I love the way Dr. Wheeler expressed this to us when I first learned this aspect of the covenants. And it's the covenant in Genesis 15. When God told Abram to go get those animals, God was the only one that walked through those animals. Usually in ancient times, the two people in covenant together would walk through those animals together. But God was the only one, meaning that God was the only one that was going to bear the responsibility for the success of the covenant. Meaning, if you fail, Abram, or the people of Abram, then I'll die. if I fail you, then I'll die. Either way, God was bearing the responsibility of that relationship. And if we take that into our marriage relationships, into our congregational relationships, at one point that Paul even said, it's better that you suffer loss for the sake of unity. And that's why I say, sometimes if you have a disagreement, you just go, I love you. That's it. That's why she says she loves me all the time. So we must understand that. Next week, Dr. Berryhill is going to bring more on the idea of the Didache. That's going to be something. It's not that we're not going to use the whole document, because it'd be kind of weird to use that document when it has a section on how to deal with your slaves. So that would be kind of weird. But we're going to use the terminology and the wording, because if the apostles in the first century, the disciples, I should say, of the first century and the second century, understood how important this document was and how to build congregations, then we're going to use it as part of what we do as a structural, not the whole thing. And that's why she's been teaching on it over the last few months. Had to take a break because she's been trying to build an ark down there. You know, they've been working, they've been having some water issues even before that. So she's going to talk more about that. And then the following week after that, we're going to talk about what that covenant and that community looks like, and the bylaws and different things to kind of share. So, you mean the covenants that we talked about? Oh, all I talked about was just how we talked about the importance of covenants and understanding that God's a covenantal God. And then, and that's why I felt like I needed to talk about this. But then next week, she was going to talk about the Didache. Is that part? Is there anything else? I don't recall. Okay. I'm not responsible for what I said 5 minutes ago. All right, so it seems like a heavy, serious topic. Was not my intent. I did feel like it was going to be, as I was going through it, a little strong. It was not meant to be, you know, if you have dealt with, you know, bad marriages in the past or whatever, that was not my intent to make it sound like a judgment or anything. That was not the case. It was that it is very important that we understand how important this is, because it is the foundation for how important it is for us to be in relationship with one another. It is the picture that God used to build the model for the community. And a lot of people in American church world don't like consternation. And sometimes it's okay. It's okay, but realize to go, you know what, you made me mad. Give me a minute. We'll get through this. Just give me a minute. And by the way, let me give you the wives some advice. If your wife's working or your husband's working through some stuff, give him a minute. Guys don't like to talk things out. Guys like to think things out. And if you're over there asking him every 5 minutes, are you okay? What are you feeling? Will you talk to me? Will you share? He's not ready yet. Just give him a minute. We are processors. We're not talkers. Women are talkers. Men are processors. So just give him a minute. It's one of the things that I just so much, one of the biggest benefits. And she's like, and I know in her mind, it's like, you just continue to go over there and be stupid for a little bit. When you're ready to talk, we can talk. Where, you know, I just, no, you just give them a minute. We think differently. We process differently. Just let us work it out. Right? And I'm sure the women could give a lot of vice versa. But, and if that's the case, and if as friends and people in covenant community together, then if we're having a disagreement with our brother and we're in community with, give them a minute. Let them work it out. Realize that we're in covenant together. We love one another. And we're going to hash this out, and we're going to stay one. So it really is kind of important in my view. All right, Heavenly Father, we bless you, we praise you, and we thank you for this Shabbat service. We thank you for the covenants and the revelation that you have been giving us, helping us and reminding us to understand that you are a covenantal God. And as you will never turn your back on us, help us to realize that is your desire for us and how we should live with those that we are in covenant with. Covenantal in the idea of the community, our church community, covenantal in our marriage community, and anybody that we're in covenant with, that we must remember that one of the promises that Yeshua gave, that the world would know that he was sent because we were one. And Father, help us to realize because we are seeking, we are striving to be a strong, formed, foundational congregation within a community, that the enemy doesn't like that. To be ready for when the fiery darts come, but to know that no matter what our brothers or sisters are going through, that we are going to be there with them, that we are going to help them become whatever it is that you have carved, that you have formed, that you have fashioned for them to be. And help us to do that, Lord God. Help us to realize that that's why we are here together, to worship you, to become the individual that you have called us and formed us to be. And that is our purpose in community and in covenant with one another. And so we bless you for this day. We thank you for this understanding. Thank you for what it is that you're doing. And we thank you for all of this in Yeshua's name. Amen.